Hello and welcome to the PR podcast series dedicated to understanding the art of public relations for business. Today's episode is all about a PR technique known as piggybacking or newsjacking, which has become a widely used tool in the world of public relations. My name is Dave Harris, and joining me today I have two contributors here to discuss the pros and cons of this practice. PR specialist Verity Blake is my regular co-presenter. Verity runs Head On PR, who are the originators and sponsors of this podcast series. Head On PR are a Cheltenham-based creative PR agency. My second guest today is John Rockley, Head of Communications and Marketing at the Rooftop Housing Group. John started his career at the BBC, where he rose to become a senior broadcast journalist and a primetime daily presenter on BBC Local Radio. Thank you both for joining me today. I wonder if we could just start by defining what piggybacking or newsjacking actually is. John, how would you describe it?
I describe it as taking advantage of what the news cycle is doing. So it's seeing the opportunity in a news story, a piece of research, in some of the narratives that are going through the news cycle, and seeing that you've got an opportunity to add to that story and basically jump on the back of it. That's why it's piggybacking. You're jumping on the back of an already existing narrative. So you're not taking the time to create and push out that narrative, but you are taking advantage of having that ability to add to it.
Verity, what's your sort of view of piggybacking? Is that a fair definition that John just gave?
Yeah, it is. It is that adding to, that's the really key thing, key point. It's joining the discussion and bringing something that's different to the discussion. Not hijacking it, but, you know, going with the flow with it, riding the wave of it, and making sure that you're adding value and it's relevant to both your organisations and your audience.
Before we get into the sort of pros and cons of it and how it might work in practice, I wonder whether you could both give me examples from your own experience, because you've both got a lot of experience in the world of PR, of this type of practice, where it's worked and where you've seen it work well. So, John, maybe you go first.
We try and use it quite a lot whenever there's any information coming out from central government about sort of housing issues, issues surrounding benefits, issues surrounding poverty, issues surrounding... In fact, we're currently looking at sort of the issues that have come out of Brexit. So we're now pushing information out to our customers about problems with right to remain and benefit issues around that. But it's from the non-profit side, it's quite easy to do that because we're about doing that information stuff. We're about getting those. We see that there is a narrative coming out. We can get onto that because we're dealing with things like social housing, poverty, benefits, which are sort of grist to the mill for a lot of news organisations. I think when it's more difficult, it's when it's for those organisations that ultimately are profit making and have to find the more appropriate ways of getting onto a narrative.
And Verity, what about you? What's your experience of it when it's worked well for you?
We have a lot of clients that are in quite controversial or quite interesting industries. And for example, cybersecurity, you know, there's always issues breaking relating to cybersecurity or GDPR compliance. And we have a lot of law firms as well, which obviously with particularly in COVID, where we've seen furloughing schemes and business grants and legislation coming through. So there is always quite a lot of opportunity for us, for our clients for this. And we do piggybacking quite a bit in the right way. And one example is where British Airways was fined about 20 million for a GDPR breach. It was quite a hefty fine. It was quite significant at the time. And we piggybacked off that for two of our clients, actually. So one of them was a cybersecurity company that advises organisations on compliance, data compliance. And we went out swiftly with a reassuring message, and that was important. It was a reassuring message and advice on how to avoid having such a breach, a data breach occurring within your business, how to safeguard your data and your organisation. And at the same time, we went out with another comment from one of our law firms, Gartner Leader, from their GDPR legal compliance expert, advising on the law and regulations around that and how to stay within the law. And together, the comments together got into the Times and about eight other different key marketing and business titles that were really relevant to their audience. that is sort of a good example of where we were bringing value to, we were bringing really, really credible advice, authentic advice to the debate. We were adding to it. So yeah, this great disaster had occurred, but how can you protect your own business from this happening?
And I guess that's a really key point, isn't it? You were adding value, you were bringing something extra to the story, because presumably you wouldn't have made it into the Times or, you know, those other national outlets had you not been doing that, because presumably it would have been spotted. So let's talk about when it would be a good idea and when it's not a good idea to do it, because it sounds, on the face of it, it sounds great. You know, you don't have to originate anything. You don't have to be particularly creative. You've just got to find an angle, I suppose, on an existing story. But what are the sort of, I mean, are there warnings, you know, are there apocryphal stories of why you shouldn't do this all the time? John, do you have experience of that?
Yeah, it's those times where you're not adding anything to the conversation, where you're not part of the ownership of the conversation, where you're almost being, there's a difference between opportunity and opportunism. Opportunism will be trying to hijack somebody else's narrative so that you're the lead within that. Opportunity is about, like Verity's been absolutely talking about, that adding value to those conversations. I can recently remember just in last summer when there was Black Lives Matter came out as a campaigning organisation, with sort of a loosely grouped organisation, and there were organisations right across the world who were sort of waving the Black Lives Matter flag, but then having to answer in public on social media some really difficult questions about how their policies and their actions didn't back that up in any way whatsoever. And it was seen as almost like, you know, you go back 5 years, greenwashing, where everybody said that they were absolutely the most environmentally friendly organisations possible, but then weren't able to back it up under scrutiny. And this scrutiny is really public these days. If you're trying to do something out into social media, there's a lot of very informed people who can quite easily just, you know, shred your website and find examples of where you aren't backing that up. And I know that in a lot of housing associations, the sector in which I'm working, there were conversations about whether people should come forward and say, yes, we support the Black Lives Matter campaign. But there were a lot of conversations. I remember having conversations with my colleagues about, this isn't our conversation. This isn't our conversation to get involved in. This is something we're not going to add anything to, and we're not going to be able to sit from a position of being involved in that. I mean, we do an enormous amount of work with the gypsy and traveller communities in the area, and that is absolutely, whenever there's a story about gypsy and traveller provision, or there's something that comes out like the recent Channel 4 documentary about the truth about gypsy crime, which was then roundly condemned by people, we were working from a position of power where we could piggyback onto that, because we've got that backup. We know what we're talking about, and we've got the history with it. So when something sort of looks a bit sexy and it's a bit zeitgeisty and you want to get involved in it, can you actually back that up? And I think that's really been shown with Black Lives Matter recently.
And Verity, I'd be interested to know, you know, because obviously John works for an organisation directly and does a lot of their PR, and he gave us some good examples there of where they've made decisions to either to piggyback or not to piggyback. As an agency, do your clients come to you and say, hey, this is a good story, let's do something about this because we know a bit about this? Or are you proactive? Do you sort of go to them and say, hey, how about doing this? I mean, how does that work in practice? I mean, are there specialists who kind of look out for these things?
Yeah, if you've got a good PR agency, they should be monitoring the news every day and flagging anything, because it could be an opportunity to piggyback off, or it could be something where you might have to prepare a reactive response in case you get inquiries, because it could be affecting your organisation negatively. So it may be that you don't want to proactively go out off the back of it, but it may be that you know, you might have a journalist that comes to you as a result of it. So some very large agencies have dedicated piggybacking departments that are literally, that's all they're doing every day, is monitoring the news for those opportunities or for those potential crisis that could be occurring. So yes, yeah, so it tends to be us flagging those opportunities to clients, or at least flagging the news and saying, this is one we need to be aware of, shouldn't be commenting on it, but we just need to be aware of it. There's also, just coming back to John's point, is that it is certainly, you know, it is about checking, is it your conversation to be involved in? And we've seen cases, though, where agencies aren't aware that they're getting involved in the wrong conversation, because what they've done is they haven't taken stock. They haven't, with social media now, a lot of tweets are pre-programmed to go out. And if a crisis hits and you're not monitoring the news, that can easily get missed. And we saw that with the Paris attacks. And there was a lot of bad publicity towards agencies because there was a lot of Paris wine companies, travel organisations tweeting out deals to Paris, cheap deals to Paris. And of course, the attacks had just happened. So people were associating the two together. That had a very, very negative impact on the reputation of those brands. And that's because those tweets have been pre-programmed. The agency has missed the association, the link, and of course things go out. So there is that whole point where you've got to keep monitoring and not miss anything, because that can very easily happen.
Yeah, sort of sounds a bit sort of accidental piggybacking in that case, but obviously in a very negative way. John, if I could get you to go down memory lane for me a little bit and remember your days as a BBC journalist, you must have received lots of press releases. I'm sure you got hundreds every day. Is it easy to spot the piggybacking ones? And as a journalist, do you find yourself making a judgment about whether it's opportunistic or opportunity, as you put it earlier?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's going back alarmingly, Dave. It's going back a decade since I left the BBC, which is frankly terrifying. It's 10 years this year. But even then, we had very, very small newsrooms dealing with a lot of content production. I was, when I was presenting, particularly in Gloucestershire, it was myself and another person putting together 15 hours of live radio. And when you've got that amount of content to try and fill a week, actually, the piggyback opportunities were brilliant. They were absolutely lifesavers, because it meant that we had a particular news story that was always going to be eaten by the breakfast show, for example. The breakfast, in this case, was always the leading news programme. They were going to eat the news. They were going to absolutely use up that story. And then every show afterwards would have to find a different spin on it. So to get those interesting sort of sideways looks at particular stories coming into your inbox at the right time, so you know that you're going to have to continue that particular story on whatever it may be. But actually, now you've got a guest who can move it on slightly. Now you've got the opportunity where you've got a bit of research that might put a different spin on it. It was like somebody was coming in and doing my job for me, and I'm not going to say that was unwelcome. You know, it was a lot of slog trying to make these. I mean, week after week, 52 weeks a year, 15 hours a week, to get somebody to just fill 10 minutes of airtime for me that I didn't have to worry about particularly, and to be a have that genuine background in what they were talking about, was absolutely brilliant. A lot of stuff, however, was just in the news you'll have recently heard, did you know we've got this to sell, which just was fairly pointless. If it was content-led, content-driven, conversation-driven, then it was absolutely invaluable.
Verity, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because what John's saying is that, you know, if you do your job right and you get that story, you get the right angle, you get the right sort of proposal to them, you know, you are going to be welcome in the newsrooms. You're going to be welcomed by the programme content producers.
Yeah, and I think when John said about data, we've seen this a lot. We use data a lot, actually, for creating stories, but also for piggybacking, particularly with COVID going on. The news agenda has just been continuous. And I can feel John's pain when he was saying about you've got to keep finding those different angles on the story. And COVID is kind of a moving beast on its own. But there has been elements where journalists have contacted us, particularly from a lot of the radio stations, and asked if we've got any, you know, some spokespeople that can talk about the continuous issues that keep arising out of COVID. And furlough has been one in particular. We did a big data campaign that uncovering furlough fraud. And the reason we did this is so that we could raise awareness of this issue of furlough fraud, which we were aware of that was occurring, so that we could help our client, Crossland Employment Solicitors, be in a really, you know, strong position in order to lend valuable advice and support to those who were in need of it during this time, whether that's the employee
that felt that their employer wasn't following the rules, or the employer perhaps was a bit confused, because there were a number of employers that were submitting applications incorrectly because they were just generally confused by the system, so they were doing it innocently. But either way, it uncovered the issue so that Crossland could then provide valuable employment law advice that has just got continuous pickup through nationals and through the radio, and it's given a lot of great content for our real key reporters to keep, you know, feeding into this story and to keep giving a different edge to it.
Yeah, and I suppose, John, that highlights an area where you've got to be a bit careful, because COVID is a classic sort of, you know, it's a big story, the biggest we've had for, well, forever probably, and yet it would be very easy to get on the wrong side, I would have thought, of that story, because it's about health, it's about real people's lives, it's about people dying. You know, there's a great tragedy going on here in the background as well. So presumably you've got to tread carefully if you're going to piggyback on something like that.
Yeah, we used to have a phrase that comes to mind in the BBC, which was basically you had to own the tone. And I think it's having some emotional intelligence when you're trying to get and piggyback onto a particular story, knowing exactly what the tone of, not necessarily the tone of what your meaning is. It's the old sort of, you know, communication semiotics of what is transmitted isn't necessarily what's being received. You've got to make sure that what you're trying to say and how you're trying to move it on is actually going to hit the right tone when it gets out there. It's like, for example, it's I suppose really talking about the COVID thing, it's the sort of fringe theories, it's the conversations that going around it, it's actually making sure that you're sticking in sort of right in the middle of this is where we are, this is the fact, this is how we can help, this is how we're offering that, rather than the... Because a lot of the time, journalists get bored of reporting the same things constantly, which is why you start getting these things that are against the default narrative. You start getting the sort of weird and wonderful creeping in the background, because it's frankly boring saying the same old things. But if you can actually say the same old things in a better way, or in a more informative way, you can certainly help with the narrative.
And Verity, that brings to mind another potential issue, in that some issues are controversial, you know, whether it be Brexit or indeed COVID for that matter, that has controversy around it as well. Then when you're doing your press release or you're doing your story that's going to piggyback on this, you presumably have to be aware that you might alienate people if you appear to come down on one side or another of something that's controversial.
There's always going to be two sides to every story. You just got to think about the brand that you're representing and their customers and what is relevant to them. Are you answering or addressing some of the challenges that those customers are facing? And it again, coming back to John's point about tone and making sure you're using the right tone.
John, did you ever see examples of that where you know, companies jumped in with a story and completely misjudged it and ended up getting themselves into all sorts of problems, hot water?
Just going back to the Black Lives Matters campaigns of last summer, and obviously the sort of violence that we saw in various places, or the robust protesting, depending on which side you want to sit on that. There was an organisation that went out onto social media saying that their particular product had a high alcohol proof, so it was really useful for Molotov cocktails if you were going out to have rioting. And I can see what was happening in their head. In their head, they thought that they were being edgy and snippy, and they were just going to add something in, and they were going to be remembered as, ooh, a bit bad boy. Unfortunately, they misjudged the tone terribly. It was some time until their website was back up after there were lots of sort of almost denial of service attacks with people going there to make angry comments. They then apologised, I seem to remember, still using it as a platform to sell their product, which again went down like a, for want of a better phrase, a bucket of cold sick. So it was one of those moments where not only did they miss the tone of the original interaction on social media, but they then missed the tone of apologising for missing the tone of their original social media. And it sort of compounded the issue even more. And it is those... If that's what their brand wanted to do, then that's what their brand wanted to do. I'm very lucky. I get to sit inside one brand at the moment, and I know what the brand identity is. From Verity's side of having multiple brands and multiple brand identities, obviously, I'm sure, Verity, you wouldn't conscience such a chain of events anyway, would you?
There is an example that is used quite a lot in media training, and that is around a taxi association that launched a social media campaign inviting people to share their stories of riding in taxis. And as a result, it went a bit wrong because they got a lot of horror stories. And rather than sort of admitting that this happened, they kind of paper over it, saying that they sort of expected that and they welcomed the feedback, including the negatives, so they could improve their service, which didn't actually go down very well. And then a few days later, there was Remembrance Sunday, and they piggybacked off that with the same hashtag campaign, taking war veterans and widows in their taxis. And the two campaigns obviously were very closely aligned and people associated them. And as a result, it got huge backlash, and it didn't help the fact they misspelt Remembrance as well.
And eventually, but it took days for them to stop tweeting, take the campaign down and hold their hands up. And this comes back to John's point again, is that if you do make a mistake, and it happens, it can happen, you've got to hold your hand up. And that's why it's so important to have a, you know, if you're piggybacking off of things and it does go wrong, you need to have a crisis management plan in place so you can react very swiftly and with very, very authentic apology, genuine apology, and usually from someone very senior within the organisation that's, you know, a key spokesperson. And you can bounce back from it, and it can end up being just like a storm in a teacup, but you have to have that swift response in place.
So I'm wondering now, as if I'm a small business owner listening to this podcast, and I'm thinking, gosh, I really should do a bit of this newsjacking, this piggybacking. But then I'm thinking, but God, it could so easily go wrong. But, you know, if I don't have the services of a company like yours, Verity, you know, is this something I should stay away from unless I've got professionals helping me, you think?
Yeah, is the answer. I would definitely need somebody that has a real knowledge of how the media works, has some good contacts as well, because what media agencies tend to do is they'll go to their trusted contacts that they've got relationships with and test it first. And they know how to write, they know how to make sure that the comment is effective and with the right messaging, right tone, as you know, as John said before. And also it's communicated in the right way and through the right channels. And they'll also advise if it's something you've got to definitely stay away from. So, yeah, I would say you need to get an expert opinion on it.
Yeah, I mean, John, you're lucky in your organisation, well, your organisation are lucky because they've got you and you have that experience, so you don't necessarily need to bring in outside experts. But do you work with agencies as well sometimes when you're planning these things?
Being a not-for-profit organisation working in the social housing world, I've got to say, it's basically me and my brain doing most of these things. What we do actually do is get some advice on occasions from agencies to make sure that tonally we're going in the right place. But that's across the sector at the moment. There's lots of housing associations that are larger than the one I'm working with that have got a much bigger audience, which are spread geographically. So it's much more difficult for those. I'm very lucky to work for an organisation of the size I do, because we are very place-based. We are very based in South Worcestershire and North Gloucestershire. We know what our audience is. So thankfully we've got the ability to keep a lot of it in-house. But I would absolutely echo what Verity said. If you don't know what you're doing, this could be just horrific. A lot of not-for-profits and a lot of smaller organisations have a try at this. And the best case scenario is you get a bit of cut through. The middle ground scenario is you get ignored completely, which is fine. You know, you've got it out there. It's been ignored. Never mind, eh? But the worst case scenario is so much a worst case scenario that if it's mishandled and it all falls down around your ears, it could be the difference between having a brand and not having a brand.
Yeah, and that brand awareness and that sort of damaging of the brand is a huge part of this, isn't it, Verity? Because if you do go in the wrong direction, or you choose the wrong story to piggyback on, it could do irreparable damage, couldn't it?
Definitely, yeah, because it can literally be gone within, you know, hours. But, you know, as I said, though, you can come back from it if with the right crisis management plan. but you want to try and avoid being in that position in the first place, of course.
We're running out of time, but before we finish, I wonder whether you could both perhaps just give us a few tips to how you, you know, would do this effectively if you were going to try and do it with or without the help of professionals. Give a few pieces of advice to just steer us in the right direction. John, could I start with you on that one?
Yeah, I suppose really from my experience of working in broadcast, one of the best ways to try and piggyback this is be a listener, be a consumer. You've got to be a listener and a consumer because it gives you an idea of the tone of the organisation you're approaching. Because if you're going out to say, I know BBC local radio, just from my experience, if you're then going to be pitching something that piggybacks off a story that's then going to be for a preteen audience, you've gone to the wrong organisation. You want something that's going to hit with their key demographics, and you want to make sure that you're getting in contact with people. I think the biggest thing that if you're trying to do something for yourself, if you're trying to bump this on, is make the right phone call. Actually have a conversation with a person, because you're able to pitch much better and you're able to make a personal connection, and they're able to know that you're authentic. You know what you're talking about. Just keep it real, really.
Thanks, John. That's good advice, and good to hear the authenticity word coming in there. Verity, a couple of tips before we finish?
Speed is important. You've got to own it. So turn it around quickly, rapidly. Own that conversation. Make sure you add value and don't use jargon. Make it clear, punchy and concise. And make sure that what you're saying, it links back to the brand DNA. Make sure that what the audience is interested in overlaps with your brand. And, you know, if it feels wrong, then don't do it.
Well, thank you both. That's been absolutely fascinating. You've been listening to the PR Podcast with me, Dave Harris, and my co-presenter, Verity Blake of Head On PR. Thanks again to our special guest, John Rockley, Head of Communications and Marketing at the Rooftop Housing Group. If you've enjoyed the podcast and found John and Verity's insight useful, then please tell your colleagues and friends and share and subscribe to hear future episodes on the art of public relations for business. For more information about Head On PR, visit their website at www.headonpr.co.uk. We look forward to you joining us for our next episode, but in the meantime, stay well and thanks for listening.